Welcome to Variant Frequencies. Month to month, our podcast brings you fiction stories from a different channel. Sci-fi, fantasy, horror, and some odd bands in between. Visit us at www.variantfrequencies.com. Hello, I'm Rick Stringer. Well, Variant Frequencies has now been delivering stories for you for 2 years. We can't believe how fast the time has gone by. It has been an honor to bring you all these stories. Our story today is by Jonathan C. Gillespie, and our narrator is one of the greatest voices in podcasting who doesn't have a podcast of his own, John Smarr. I hope you enjoy the story as much as we did creating it for you. Now, on to our story. Spired by Jonathan C. Gillespie. Obsession is close kin to determination. For one man, an alien peak seems just another obstacle capable of being conquered with the right set of tools. But any climber will tell you, you don't want to look back the way you came.
Inspired by Jonathan C. Gillespie. Kor looks up the spire, his muscles tensed, locked to the rock, despite the wind, despite the altitude, which starves sound in emaciated air. He wants to keep moving. His fingers have been dug into the rock so long, he thinks he can almost feel plant roots intertwining around them. Water drips on his cheek from a crack in the stone. Lichens tickle his nostrils. But Kor knows he'll miss these sensations soon. Bold white has replaced green with increasing fervor as he's ascended. Even with 6 vertical miles left, he's already seen death. He's seen corpses curled into muted husks along the walls. Others still hanging by their autopitons, limp limbs dangling, eyes withered grapes in pale gourds. He's seen other dead lying on outcroppings, or on jagged edges, stone beneath, stained, where organs fled impacts. Now, he thinks he sees death again. The man, 5 feet up, on the ledge, is reaching a hand down towards him. His eyes look sincere, but no savior climbs the spire. Kor knows an agenda when he sees it. "Come on," the other man yells. "I lost my autopython. I just want to go down." Kor smiles, but it's forced. He'll waste time talking to this urchin. But if the man's intentions warrant it, he has an ion pistol.
"Okay," he says.
He reaches a hand up. The stranger grabs his hand, grunts as he helps him up. Kor's shoes reform their treads for better traction. He makes it over, sits down, and the other man does the same, panting. Kor takes out a hydrogen booster, extends its siphon, and drinks water as the device draws in oxygen from an intake on the other side.
"That's a nice booster," says the other man.
But he implies something else. That spire climbers don't buy gear like that off a store shelf. Kor plays dumb.
"Who are you?"
"Turgo. You trying to climb this mountain without an autopython?"
He laughs, a disguise for nervousness.
"I haven't needed to use them yet."
Turgo's eyes widen.
"You're that good?"
Kor ignores the implication.
"So, you lost your only autopython, Turgo?"
"Yes, up on the 4th mile. It disengaged and dropped. Had to climb back down here."
Kor nods.
"Blind luck you weren't hanging by it."
He's heard stories.
bad quality black market gear often winds up with desperate climbers. Sometimes they plummet all the way to the city streets.
Yeah, blind luck,
Turgo repeats, eyes unfocused.
So, you have a spare autopython?
I have two, says Kor. Turgo's eyes shine.
Can you help me out? My family can pay yours triple your costs once I get back down.
You attempted the spire without proper gear, asks Kor. Even though you're so wealthy?
We all fall on black times.
Kor shrugs. Sometimes we just fall. Turgo glares, faint flickers of fury in his eyes, like the first traces of steam before water boils.
Don't you judge me. You're here too. We both want what the Bice won't let us have, and you're desperate enough, just like me, to climb the spire for it.
He's right. It's cost Kor everything to be up here. An experienced climber doesn't attack a mountain unprepared. And it is an attack, a war between man and rock. He needs his gear and his strength. He needs his bliss. God, how he needs his bliss. Just the thought of it. He reaches a hand into the front pocket of his triple insulated vest. Dirty nails dive calloused fingertips to his prize. Then he catches Turgo looking.
You have bliss?
Turgo asks, and Kor knows it's gotten serious. It's gotten deadly. Kor snaps his pocket shut.
I'll pay you for some, says Turgo. Whatever you want.
He crawls towards Kor, eyes fixed to his pocket like he's seeing angels. What about the autopython? Asks Kor. I thought you wanted to buy that. His left hand trails behind his back, finds the ion pistol's hilt.
No, the bliss,
says Turgo.
I need bliss more, much more!
He pants, shoulders shaking. Then he attacks, gloves spread out like talons. Kor jerks the pistol out, around. Its high-pitched discharge removes the right side of Turgo's skull. The body takes a moment to realize it's masterless, then stumbles over the ledge. Bones call out their surrenders to the spire. He stands and takes out another autopython. He has two left, including this one. It's a 20-foot coil of titanium-laced robotic rope with retractable python drills at each end and a harness to go around his waist and shoulders. He'll climb as the pythons automatically adjust their positions to follow his ascent, making him as safe as possible. He ties it on, tries not to think about it failing, like Turgo's had. Turgo reminded Kor of someone else. Someone that's pleaded, argued, betrayed, stolen, and killed. But the alien Bice, who conquered Olifar, didn't make the spire easy to climb. You don't get up its sides without their illegal medicine, known on the streets as bliss. Vital bliss. His actions are automatic, as second nature as eating when hungry. One dose winds up in his mouth. A sweet, hot sensation of ecstasy, confidence, and capability fills his being. His lungs breathe easier. His flesh tingles, renewed. His concentration and aggression merge into one singular objective, the top of the spire. That's worth losing everything. Kor's 4 miles up the spire's vertical sides, making good time. The now common ice glares whenever the clouds part, burn him with a million mirrors shining into his face, even through his visor. He takes a moment to rest, huffs vapor out with each breath, and looks down the way he came. Although it resembles a ragged-edged cylinder, it's a cone, over 9 miles tall, that tapers upwards from a base only twice as wide as the plateau at its apex. After Olifar surrendered to the Bice, the aliens brought a huge ship, its lights like an artificial star field, which implanted this cone from a comet's core into the middle of Daga City.
Daga City's buildings stretch skyward around the spire, mile-high toddlers in the shadow of a patriarch. He doesn't see human aircraft over the city, because they're shot down if they lift off. But he has seen them elsewhere. He looks up the spire. He's seen ships touch down in broad daylight topside. Back alleys whisper, that's the only place humans are allowed to come and drop off imports. When he reaches the peak, he'll find a way aboard a ship. He'll yell loud over the BICE propaganda campaign. Show the galaxy the oppression, the corruption, and the crushed hope. No time to delay any longer. Kor places an oxygen feeder on his nose. It's a rusted device, as long as a finger, that digs into his inner nostrils. At street level, someone would make more off it than a bag of Dofer injections. He raises a boot, slams it into the ice, and it cackles as it shatters. Kor shifts his weight fast. Would be, even if Bliss wasn't helping. This isn't the first time he's been this high. But that boot also breaks free. His shoes grasp and fumble against the frozen defender, flail their polyorganic feelers, and find no purchase, no way to stop his momentum. He spins over backwards in his harness, throws his gloves towards the spire's surface, misses, and for a moment, he falls. His mind flashes back to the bar, to Lur, his Bliss dealer, his only friend left, telling him he's going to make it up the spire, that he believes in him even though Kor's own family doesn't. Empty glasses hit the counter. Pain shoots up his waist as the autopitons stop him, scream from the strain, their drills wailing into the ice. But the autopitons hold. His ribs hurt. The harness gyroscopic stabilizers barely compensated for the stumble. He stabs his left boot back into the ice, then the other. His gloves find handholds. The left autopython's drill releases, works its way up, like a seedling to the sun, and implants again. He pulls himself up the ice. He works laterally across the spire's surface and pauses beneath the shadow of an ice shelf. Foot-long icicles point like teeth towards a morsel called his skull. He's aware of them, but much more aware of something else. The need. The need amplifies his doubt, demands tribute. Another dose of Bliss. Another rush. Limbs tingle, feel strong, boundless, full of pent-up energy, begging for release. This is what his family doesn't get. What they'll never fucking get. Only Lur does. Kor tried to surmount his family's opinions about his friend. Arguments bled accusations. Suspicion spilled strings of curses booming from an emotional cannon. Kor got into a fistfight with his brother. Both of them drew blood, but Kor ran before BICE sector enforcement showed up. Lur took him in. He shakes his head. He'll make them all believe. He makes good time, sure and confident, and 3 miles pass before he stops. The sun stabs him with blazing anger as it collides with the horizon, as if telling him it's not done with him yet, that it'll be back tomorrow for more. Most die here, when the night catches them. Frost blows off the spire with each gust of wind, lashes him in the face. But it doesn't stop him from finding a 2-foot overhang to lay on. He's prepared for this. He rolls onto his side and pushes a button on his suit's collar. A hood draws up and over his face. The suit warms, but the autopython locks in, drills deep. Kor tucks his limbs into his chest and rests in the womb of heat. He doesn't think about his roaring stomach. No room for food in his pack. Besides, he has distractions. The wind whistles at his back. The spire throws crackling debris down its sides, closer than he wants to think about. If a nap is huddling in fear, then he sleeps the entire night. The sun rises, full of rage, reflected in the spire's ice-laden scales. Kor wakes and retracts his hood. He remembers not to roll over, despite his cramped arms. He rises a few feet off the shelf, then plants his boots, stretches his arms. He lowers his face mask long enough to pop some bliss into his mouth, then pulls it back up. He can focus again. He looks around. The view is magnificent. Olafar is two surfaces, the white and gray vertical slab of the spire, and the concrete horizon. He allows a moment of pride. He's so much farther than any thought possible, over 2 miles into the death zone. But he still has another 2 vertical miles. Kor starts upward again. His joints pump pain to his brain. The sensation begins to fade as worn muscles warm up and accept their task. 1/2 mile brings him to the hardest ice. Snow and rock are kin in this place, each as solid as the other. But at least they don't move. Something else does. He sees it crawling horizontally across the ice, 100 feet up. About the size of a dog, its 6 thin, triple-jointed legs lift and step, each always at an opposite motion to the leg diagonally opposed to it. This reminds him of a lizard's calculated steps to shield feet from the heat of desert sand. Kor has heard about these creatures. Supposedly, they're hyper-aggressive predators the bice seeded on the spire from their homeworld. He'd always considered the so-called ice phantoms, rumors, products of alcohol and narcotics. Seeing one quickens his pulse. He doesn't see any sense organs on its white, sausage-shaped body. It drives a prehensile feeler into a large lump of ice. He wonders if it consumes the ice or something in it. He shoves curiosity aside and glances to the left. The spire's terrain seems insurmountable there, but that's no different than any other path he'd take. He's sure he can pass this creature without it even noticing him. So he moves across the left side of the ice. Each advance is followed with an immediate glance towards the phantom. It doesn't move, not even when gusts of wind strike it and strike Kor, rippling his coat. His limbs feel numb, distant. Fear shoves forward from the back of his mind, demands his attention. Maybe he is freezing to death and doesn't know it. Maybe he'll stumble into another ice phantom. Worse, maybe the bice will find him. He's seen their patrol ships zoom past the spire before. It's rare, but it does happen. Any of these things might get him, might kill him. He stops and hangs in place, steals a glance towards the phantom off to his right. It glitters in the sun, its undulating proboscis like a phallus, violating the ice. Kor can't take the fear anymore. He unclips his heated face mask. He withdraws a pill and lifts it to his mouth, but it rolls off chapped lips. Limbs snatch and dart for the blue gem like animals swarming prey. An elbow smacks the ice as he tries to hug his entire form around the pill. Too late. It bounces off his right boot, tumbles, drops towards humanity, miles below. He curses, loud, frustration shooting out along the spire.
Fuck!
Then he realizes his stupidity and looks over to the right. The ice phantom isn't there. Eyes scan every direction. Wind claws his face. Nothing. No strange sounds. No movement. He'd much rather see it charging him, much rather have confirmation of his worry, than tortured suspense. His left hand reaches back for the ion pistol, finds the hilt, He pulls it free, holds it to the left of his cheek, teeth clattering. He feels the cold. He needs bliss and fast. He can't afford to be plain human up here. He doesn't dare move a hand to clip his face mask back. He'd lose some of his field of view, and he can't do that when the phantoms could be anywhere. Ice flakes fall from above. Core freezes in place. They patter off his coat, his face. He blinks his eyes, blows them off his lips. He directs the pistol overhead, waits. For 5 minutes, he keeps the pistol pointed up the spire. Then, 10 more. His arm shakes, but not from exertion. Even with the suit heating at its maximum setting, the cold invades his open face mask, charges down his neck. Don't die out here, he thinks to himself. Keep climbing. He looks at the pistol. Just having it aimed somewhere feels reassuring. He'll have to put it back to climb further. He returns the pistol. Then he pulls himself higher. Looks around. Higher. Looks around. 15 more feet, and his eyes catch the upper side of the ice the phantom had fed on. In that moment, Kor considers descending. He considers rushing back down as fast as possible, getting the hell off this damn spire, and scratching out the rest of his life any way he can, even if it means more lying, stealing, and killing. The phantom's prize is a corpse, encased in semi-opaque ice. Frozen eyes stare from inside. A shaft, 3 fingers wide, descends to the corpse's stomach. The sides of the shaft are pink. Kor can't stop, not for this latest horror. He moves on. The autopython's right python removes itself, rises. And the ice comes alive. They rise from the spire's skin, not one, but 3 ice phantoms, and charge the python. They wrap around it, legs jabbing and stabbing. The python's programming thinks a surface is found, that it must anchor. The drill drives into a phantom's flesh. The whine of metal on bone merges with the animal's high-pitched cry of agony. Purple blood geysers out, crackles as it flash freezes, an amethyst ice storm. Kor hugs the ice. The mass of phantoms and autopython falls, smacks the rock above and to his right. A phantom flies out into space, broken limbs stabbing at the air, a white dot that vanishes. He reaches for the autopython's emergency release button. He's not fast enough. The writhing phantom's fall is cut short by the line, his harness, his waist, his pain. He cries out, grits his teeth. Ah! The line sways in the wind, a mass of thrashing animals and blood at the end. The impaled phantom stabs at the python with its legs. The other drives its feeding organ into the trapped animal's flesh. Its screams echo off the ice. The autopython retracts, dropping the wounded animal. Its cannibalistic kin hangs on the line, darts its blood-slicked proboscis around in the air, looking for its missing meal. Kor realizes, in panic, that a whirring noise is coming from above and to the left. The other python is malfunctioning. The phantom climbs the line like a spider on a thread, limbs stabbing through the metal, proboscis searching, searching for the source of the vibrations. Kor grips the ice with his left hand and fumbles at the emergency release button. Numb fingers grasp through thick gloves the switch at his waist. The phantom's so close, he sees the purple-tinted veins along its limbs. He wraps his fist around the release, squeezes with all his strength. The autopython goes limp. The harness unfastens around his waist. The ice phantom falls. Kor's body shakes. His hands feel distant, his face a plaster mask. Frostbite has come to visit. He is tempted to let go, to give up, to forget fighting other obstacles the spire might yet inflict on him. Another vertical mile and a half remains. He'd give anything to hear Lur's reassuring words.
All his fears coalesce into one desire. More bliss. Before he even attaches another autopython, he must sate his desire. He fishes around in his pocket. Fingers probe and search. He gasps. Is he out? God help him, is he out? No. He finds one left. He studies this last pill in his cupped glove. The alien medicine swirls within the capsule, a thing of beauty. He shoves it through his lips, holds his head back, and flattens his palm against his mouth, making sure it's in. Swallows. Kor feels the warmth spread throughout his body, feels his flesh waking up, his skin renewed. Warmth everywhere. He pulls his face mask up and slaps his right hand against the spire. I'm climbing you to the top, bitch, he says. You think you got me? He withdraws his last autopython from his backpack, clips it on his waist. He chuckles as it auto-calibrates, reads systems go, and the pythons extend on their line to anchor him. You haven't got me yet, he says. He lifts a boot and drives it into the ice, harder than need be. I'm going to make it. He stops, looks down one more time. He sees patches of Daga City through the clouds. I'm going to make it! He yells. You said I couldn't, but I will! He climbs. Each 500 feet, he says it again to himself. He focuses on conquering each step up, knowing he's closer every moment, that he won't be stopped, can't be stopped. The sun dives towards the horizon. The drug's effects start bleeding away. Kor looks up. The spire's wall ends 100 feet over his head. He struggles against the rock, the ice. He's not hungry, his digestive system having stopped. But he won't give up. Not this close. He climbs. He climbs. He grips and pulls with stubborn hands. He raises legs that argue with his will. 50 feet left. The sun hides for another night. But the top of the spire glows, like stolen jewelry in the light of a street lamp. 40 feet left. The temperature plummets every minute. Cold is a simpleton's word that doesn't do the temperature justice. Kor knows that even the advanced coat won't help him much longer. The chill stabs through the material and overpowers the heating elements. Were it not for the ebbing bliss, he'd be dead. But it's to the top or to the grave. 30 feet. Then 20. 10 left. He watches, transfixed, as a python rises over the last bit of wall and anchors somewhere on the top. He climbs another few feet, and the other does the same. He raises an arm to the ledge above. The light catches his hand, illuminates it. He drapes his fingertips, calloused explorers, over the edge of the precipice. They find rock. Flat rock. He resists the urge to scramble upward. He slips over the top with the last of his strength and collapses face first, pants for breath. Every muscle cries for relief. Each joint sings a saturated sonnet of throbbing, rhythmic pain. Everest. Tertia Arcona. J-29. Olympus Mons. And now, at long last, the Spire. Conquered. He lays for several minutes, forcing himself to breathe through his nose respirator again. When he thinks he has the strength back, he stumbles to his hands and feet. He stands. He sees four illuminated, dome-shaped objects embedded in the rock, equidistant to each other, each one to one side of the spire's center. Ice vapor boils off their surfaces. Marker lights, he thinks. But no ships. He scans the starlit sky. It's like an old photo of raindrops lit by the camera's flash. It reminds him of many views he's seen at the summits of those other giants on those other worlds. Worlds he'll see again. But no ship. A thought scratches his skull. He wonders if he's climbed all this way for nothing. No, that can't be right. He's seen traffic here almost every day. All he need do is wait. A dot moves across the sky. Its light grows stronger each moment. It's too low to be a star. He takes out his ion pistol, checks the charge. Empty! He'll have to bluff if the human merchants won't let him aboard willingly. He puts the pistol back, then squints his eyes, tries to make out the shape of the craft. It swoops down over the spire's plateau. Something's wrong. The engine's too silent, too refined to be human-built. The jagged, harsh edges of the diamond-shaped ship tell him this is what he dreaded finding the most. It's a vice ship. A patrol. The end of his life approaches him on alloy wings. He collapses to the rock. Doesn't run. Doesn't try to climb back down. They know he's here, if not via optics, then sensors. The ship powers down and lands. The craft vomits a retractable ramp from a portal that appears in the fuselage. Two bice step out, each twice his height, each in combat armor. Slitted eyes glare at him from illuminated helmets. Long, insulated talons clutch antimatter rifles. A small robotic drone buzzes around and behind the bice. A hollow recorder glows on its spheroid body. Poor sobs, cries in anger, pounds the rock with one hand.
No! No!
Another figure falls in behind the bice. It's a man, in a similar set of armor, though the ship's wing masks him in shadows. He takes off its helmet. A grin crosses his face, pearl teeth shining in the middle of the silhouette.
It's a little cold up here, the stranger says. But I knew that wouldn't stop you, Kor.
He steps forward, and the light shows the horrid truth. Lur chuckles.
You've gotten higher than any of my other horses yet. The Bice generals thought this spire was insurmountable. But I told them how resourceful you were.
But...
Kor shakes his head.
The Bliss...
winds up in the hands of almost every horse, says Lur. You think they don't notice supplies missing from their depots? You think they don't slip guys like me some deliberately?
No, says Kor. You can't do this.
Oh, come on, says Lur. You should know better. Lots of people are willing to cut deals to have it easier on this planet. The Bice are here to stay, Kor. And there are two types of humans in their service. The rich.
He nods at the Bice. They approach Kor.
And the duped.
Kor raises his hands. He scrambles backwards, grabs a handful of gravel, and hurls it at them as hard as he can. It clatters off the alien's armor. The Bice point their rifles at him. His scream is cut short.
No! No.
Thank you for listening to Spired by Jonathan C. Gillespie, narrated by John Smarr. We will have more information about them on our show notes and on our MySpace and LiveJournal pages. Recently, Anne and I had the pleasure of being interviewed by Wanderwolf for his podcast, Wander Radio. This is a rare opportunity to hear Anne talk about her craft, and you can hear some of the background of variant frequencies. Check it out at wanderradio.com. Oh, and one more thing. If any of you are going to the Macworld Expo in San Francisco, send me a note at variantfrequencies@gmail.com. I will be there, and I would love to meet you. To find out more about Variant Frequencies, please go to our website at www.variantfrequencies.com. If you like Variant Frequencies, tell your friends about us. Thank you. From the Variant Frequencies team, Matt Wallace, Ann Stringer, and Rick Stringer.
In a world where evil supervillains run amok and corrupt superheroes care more about their hair than justice, one woman is caught in a web of manipulation. Keepsie Branson just wants to run her bar. She doesn't want to think about her old dreams of being a superhero or her tired ambitions to save the world. But the facts remain that Keepsie and her friends have powers too, and they will soon be needed as Seventh City falls into chaos, and no one knows who are the good guys and who are the bad. Playing for Keeps is a free audiobook from Murr Lafferty, available at playingforkeepsnovel.com.
The land of Cairn. It is a world where gods can choose to live mortal lives to directly affect events in the world, and often do. The river of magic is rising. Monsters are moving into Cairn through tears in the fabric. The dead are escaping Callan's abyss, and the children of Aj have returned, just as the prophets foretold. But even as these overarching events play themselves out, a piece of the puzzle falls into place in the seemingly unremarkable town of Avedon Hill. Aramis Cragen, retired Aranic advisor, arrives at Avedon Hill and is asked to investigate the murder of Greta Platt, the Avedon Manor housemistress. But in doing so, Aramis uncovers secrets that threaten Cairn's very foundation. What begins as a search for justice becomes a fight for survival, all in a place where nothing is what it seems. Welcome to the land of Cairn. Welcome to Murder at Avedon Hill, a podcast novel by P.G. Holyfield, featuring some of the great voices of podcasting and podcast fiction.
A perfect place for Greta Platt to escape the troubles of the day. So beautiful, so inspiring. Also a fine place for someone to catch her defenseless and end her life.
Not now, Joris. You chose the wrong time for one of your rants about undead threats rising
there
in Cairn.
There is evil here in Avedon Hill. You can never be sure what will greet you at your door.
Of course it has to be alive. You should have known that, monk.
You promised us the hunter, and you have failed us. You promised us a power beyond our understanding, and again, you have failed us.
You have not seen what I have seen. Events are transpiring that neither you nor I can affect.
Aaron's powers have peaked from under those covers. I hope you both survive long enough to find a use.
Brother of Aaron, look how you've aged. You've spent so much of your life in darkness.
Murder at Avedon Hill by P.G. Holyfield. Sit back and let the mystery unfold. Learn more at pgholyfield.com and patiobooks.com.
The following is a promo for 12voltheater.com. Hello, my name is Alice. I'm adrift in a world of ever-shifting roads. A world with little boys in overalls with 30 wings. A world where a dark wind can eat one person down to the bone, while leaving the other still holding their hand. My destiny was cut for me by the knife I hold in my hand. Will I find salvation? Will I find damnation? Help me decide in a podcast like no other. Vote on the decisions I must make at the end of each podcast. Then find out the results 2 weeks later. Available exclusively at 12voltheater.com. I'm waiting for you to join me. Just down the road.
Handcrafted Stories. from a unique podcaster. 12volttheater.com.
As a special gift to all our listeners this holiday season, Variant Frequencies is happy to present The Failed Cities, Path a Darkness, an exclusive 10,000-word e-chapbook written by Matt Wallace and available as a free PDF download. As a black snowfall blankets the failed cities on Christmas Eve, the arrival of 99 mysterious steel chambers sets a series of far-from-blessed events in motion. 8 people become links in a deadly chain that will either tether innocent lives to safety or strangle any hope for their future. And as each part of the story unfolds, we learn that above all things, Christmas in the failed cities is a feverishly struck balance between the constant threat of violence and the briefest, most bittersweet moments of joy. We hope you enjoy this unique addition to the Failed Cities universe. Happy holidays from all of us at Variant Frequencies.